Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Welcome to another segment of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight, we've got a great show lined up for you. We want to talk about something most people stay away from, and that's the subject of what's going on in hip-hop right now. Our topic tonight is the price to be a hip-hop artist too high? We hear all kind of rumors all the time, and we know most of our young kids look up to these artists, but there's a lot going on in that industry that we're going to cover tonight. You know, we've heard about the beef, or if you haven't, you've been under a rock, the beef that's going on with Rick Ross and the Gangster Disciples. We're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about the open letter that Jay-Z did to Congress after he went to Cuba. And, you know, he came back with a rap because they were questioning whether or not he was supposed to be over there or not. And because right now the country of Cuba is off limits to just tourism. So that's another thing we're going to cover. We're going to talk about hip-hop female artists and how there's rumors now that they're bleaching their skin. Is this really true? And if so, is it pressure from the industry to bleach your skin? We're going to talk about Illuminati rumors. You know, a lot of people are saying that there's a infiltration of the Illuminati in hip-hop. We want to talk about that. We also are going to cover human sacrifices. You know, y'all, this is a tough subject because I'm torn on the subject, but I've heard so many things and it's really making me wonder. So we're gonna talk about it tonight, whether or not that's a part of becoming an artist who's making $20 million or more. Do you really have to sell your soul to the devil, and do you have to make a human sacrifice of one of your loved ones? We're going to talk about that tonight, y'all. Beefing. We want to talk about beefing among rap artists. You know, is it really necessary to have this tougher-than-life image and beef with another rapper? We know that that's what happened with Tupac and Biggie, and we know that both young men ended up dying as a result of that beef. So we're going to cover that a little bit tonight. We also hear a lot about satanic rituals being done over this hip-hop music. Supposedly, they're taking these CDs and they're putting them in a circle and they're doing satanic rituals over this music. Don't know if it's true or not, but we're going to talk about it tonight, y'all. Also, we want to talk about the fact that female artists, we're seeing female artists right now in the hip-hop industry that are basically getting on stage almost naked. Does it really take that to get your message across? Is that needed? Do you have to perform with costumes basically revealing everything in order to attract a larger audience? We're going to talk about that tonight, y'all. Also, we're going to talk about Chris Brown and Drake. Remember how they were beefing and fighting in the parking lot of a studio? What is that all about, and why is it necessary? Also, we're going to cover Whitney Houston, Aaliyah, and Michael Jackson. You know, it has been said that those deaths were associated with the Illuminati and human sacrifices and things like that. And last but not least, y'all, we just want to talk about whether or not this music, in terms of the industry, is going in the wrong direction. Is it dumbing us down? Is it really, you know, a hot beat over, as I call it, bubblegum lyrics? Do the lyrics even make any sense anymore, or is it just necessary to have, you know, a big entourage behind you and a big entourage behind you and some hot beats? And is the lyrics even important anymore? So, y'all, that's what we're going to be getting into tonight, you know, as far as is the price to be a hip-hop artist way too high? So that's what we're going to be covering tonight. But, y'all, listen, I got some smart folks who's going to come on tonight and do it with me. A.J. Houston is a poet out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and he is someone who is, I call it, he weaves words like magic, and he comes up with some of the most beautiful poetry, and you just wonder if there are people out there who can put words together and make beautiful music, I call it, with just the words that they put together. Why aren't these people being, brought on to help write some of these songs today? Because most of the music that we're listening to is really is stuff that's really not pertaining to anything that's going on in our world. And also, we're going to talk to Dunny B tonight. Dunny B is a DJ. He's also had his own TV show, and he's been dealing with interviewing hip-hop artists for the longest. I think his scope goes back like 20 years, how long he's been doing this. Also, we're waiting for Chilimos to call in tonight. We have not seen Chilimos' number on the board unless I'm not recognizing that. And if it is, if he would, press 1. But we're supposed to talk to Chilimos. Chilimos is in the industry as well. And so those are some of the things that we're going to be covering, and those are some of the people that are going to cover it with us tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome A.J. Houston and Dunny B right now. Good evening, guys.
What's up, Carrie? How you doing? How you doing, Donnie? You doing all right?
Donnie B, did we lose him? Donnie B, you there?
Hello?
Okay,
you
there?
Yes, how you doing?
I'm good.
I'm doing good. Most excellent.
So y'all heard some of the things that I said we're going to go into. So we're going to start off like you know where we're going to end up, y'all. But, you know, so the industry has gotten so crazy from its inception. And maybe, you know, AJ, you can kind of tell us. When hip-hop first started, what did we have when the music first came out that was known as hip-hop?
Well, when hip-hop first started, we had a lot of groups that was, you know, talking about where they were, what they were from, and it was the party atmosphere, the groove music, you know, because LL Cool J was the first to come out with a hip hop love song.
Okay.
Well, a smooth song that was dedicated to the women, basically.
Okay. But back in the day, wasn't hip hop first on the scene when we were seeing Run DMC and acts like that rapping about, you know, things like socially conscious stuff that we all were concerned about at the time, almost kind of like the 60s kind of feel to it in terms of the socially conscious music that was coming out at the time?
Well, it was always a twist of social consciousness within the lyrics. But okay. But what actually happened, Ron DMC was the first group to be, I guess, platformed with a rock group. So they put them out there because... And they were the first group to get a contract because when they came out with My Adidas.
Okay.
Adidas started flying off the shelf, so Adidas gave them a contract.
Okay, gotcha.
And nobody was doing it at first, but
go ahead.
But they found strength in the ability for them to promote to millions of listeners that Adidas didn't have, they weren't privy to at the time. But then conscious lyrics came out, you know what I'm saying, Ice Cube, and you know what I'm saying, there was all these groups. There were so many groups that things were happening, Rodney King, all the other things that was happening, and people were singing about it. It turned to be like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder when they decided to sing up some conscious lyrics.
Okay.
And Bobby Womack, you know what I'm saying, all these people started the mood of singing with, I guess, intellectually written lines that was talking about the consciousness of the things that was going on.
Okay. And so if you think about where we started to where we are now, things have changed. I mean, back then they weren't rapping about, you know, big butt women, you know, who, you know, were giving them all kind of freaky sex and, you know, money and cars. That was not the message that we first heard. So music in the hip-hop industry has changed, and the question is why? Is the audience demanding that, or has something changed in the industry that's making that happen? Is this coming from the record execs that are asking for this type of music, or what is exactly happening?
Well, it's twofold. Because, you know, as a black community, you know, because it was said, never proven, that the FBI and everybody was the ones that put drugs in the black community, that put the guns in the black community, because we don't have any labs to make drugs and we don't have any manufacturing facilities to make guns, but we had guns and drugs in our community. We were being arrested for carrying guns and selling drugs. But the thing was, is we had this thing where there were no, I guess, what do we call them? I just know them as titty bars. That's what I got to call them. See, titty bars are everywhere now.
Right.
See, titty bars can make you have a number one hit. So you want them. So a lot of rappers are making songs for the dances at the titty bars, making it rain and want to, you know, make it clap and all these other things. So that's the music that we want. But even women that don't go to titty bars that's in the club are hopping up dancing to the same records that they play in the titty bars as those that's a pole somewhere on the dance floor when it's non-existent.
Hmm. Okay, let's go to the phone lines and see what they're saying. We're going to go to area code 323-983. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hello, this is Chili Mox in Los Angeles. How you doing this evening?
Well, good evening, Chili Mox. Chili Mox is a part of our panel tonight. Thank you, Chili Mox, for chiming in tonight. You know, we were just talking about where hip-hop originated. What do you remember when hip-hop first came out?
Well, you know, the first rap song, if you wanted to call it rap, is to the hip-hop because there's all these different names that people use. It was James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. Mm.
Yeah. Hip-hop went way back there.
Well, James has been the most, sampled artist in the history of music. But the first rap song was Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And that was in 1968. That's when some you know, in the 60s, there was a transformation from the 50s and the 60s. Black people was once called colored, then they became Negroes, and then and with the Black Power Movement, it became black, and James came with the song, Say It Out, I'm Black and I'm Proud, and so it went from that, and then, you know, the first successful, I mean, the first mega hit was by the Sugar Hill Gang, you know.
Okay.
If you guys remember the Sugar Hill Gang, that was the first song that actually was a commercial hit. Then, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, the history of rap music, hip hop, or whatever you guys want to call it, whatever it's fashionable to say today, you know, you talk about Kool Herc and Curtis Blow and Africa Bambaataa and all those brothers like that, and you know, but I think that you know, it was used as a powerful social statement back in the day, and then once, you see, between 1979 and 89, the record industry was saying that it was just going to be a fad, so they didn't really pay attention to it. And so with all the socially conscious music that was coming out, they started making so much money, was influencing people in such a way that James Brown, now, you know, I did a song called Free James Brown when James was in prison in 1989. And in between 79 and 89, his music was sampled over 4,000 times and in a 10-year period. And it wasn't no way you could get paid in that time. And so for all the artists who sampled, they wouldn't have to pay James for sampling his music. But then once the record industry said, well, this style of music is going to be here to stay, then they came up, well, we need to control this, and we need to get the message out that we want to get out. And so when... Mm-hmm. When the brothers N.W.A. came out with Dre and all the brothers Ice Cube and them brothers came out with this gangster rap, then that's when the record company flipped it, and the socially conscious hip hop was phased out, and then they controlled the media. Anytime you can control the media, you can control the mindset. You know, I have an international Stop the Violence campaign right now. We're talking about changing the mindset.
But Chili Mo.
Go ahead, Bob.
I'm not going to interrupt you. I just want you to go back a little bit because you're moving forward and you're going in a great direction. But skipping from James Brown and the Sugar Hill Gang, you have George Clinton out, and George Clinton is the one that made all that other stuff popular. So you got to throw him in the crack in there to let him fit, and then go from there. And I'll let you go on home.
Well, you know, George came, but, you know, actually, when you talk about George Clinton and what happened with George, George came out in the 60s with a song called I Want to Testify, which is on Motown. And then,
yeah,
you know, when he started doing this thing in the 70s, he got together with Bootsy, and the band used to be Bootsy and Catfish. Bootsy's older brother played the guitar. He got them guys played with James. They did, they did the song Sex Machine, and they was with James for a year, and then when Bootsy and Catfish and them brothers left James, they hooked up with George, and that's when George really took off with the Mothership Connection. And so George definitely was, and his music is sampled a lot too. You know, but it's a lot of artists.
That's
what
I
want. Well, y'all, let's see what Erico 713 is talking about. Erico 713-309. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Yes, how you doing? This is Skip Flanagan. How are you?
Hi, Skip Flanagan. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Great topic.
You got a lot of experience in the industry.
Oh, yeah. I got a nice album. You know what I'm saying? I have a song that I was offered a 3-year contract with Randy Jackson and America's Best Dance Crew, but it's still hard to get my album played on the radio, so I know exactly what you're talking about right now.
Well, then let's talk, and you know what, let's go there then. The industry, in terms of being an indie artist, how hard is it to get you a spin on the radio?
Man, really, payola has taken over radio. When you go back and look at radio, the drug dealers are actually the guys that are pushing the labels. What happened was, back in, say, when Master P came out and N.W.A. came out, you know, a lot of people were underground. You know what I'm saying? The underground was making more money than the people overground. You know, just like TV, blacks were crying about they couldn't get on the radio and curse, or they couldn't get on TV unless they were perfect and stuff like that. So they started making a lot of money underground. And so what the companies did was, they was like, well, since there's a whole bunch of money being made underground, we can use these drug dealers who got the money to do the promotion, and we can save ourselves some money and not do the promotion, have these drug dealers who have the cars and the flash and everything that everybody likes, and they're easier to promote, you know what I'm saying, versus being socially conscious, you know what I'm saying, and going and signing artists that was a good guy or something like that and putting the money behind them. They decided not to use that money and go ahead and at the same time promote the drug war. You know, all those guys were promoting drugs. Master P was, you know, had came out with that song telling everybody how to cook dope, and he ended up making $400 million, and that was a great, you know, little thing where they just kind of like just turned a whole generation of people all the way around to something else. So, you know, there was a whole lot of stuff that went into signing those guys like Jay-Z when he double crossed Damon Dash. You know, a lot of that was to leave an impression on generations of people.
Really? So there was a double cross with the deal that went down with Jay-Z and Damon Dash.
Damon Dash and Jay-Z got into some real stuff. You know, when you look at that, the way that happened, you know, and I always say you've never seen it where, you know, the record companies will promote where a group of people are making $400 million. When you look at all the people that have made $400 million or better, or $200 million even, those were the guys that did something that was not real positive, selling dope, you know. Jay-Z, you know, how can you go from being the worker to the guy that owns the company? You know what I'm saying? That's unheard of. You know, if I was working at McDonald's or somewhere, and, you know, when we got a, we incorporated the business, and I ended up being the CEO, all hell would break out. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so we have to look at all those things that go on, you know, with music. You know, I've seen it where, you know, me and some guys in my neighborhood, you know, they sell dope like 90 going south. You know, Warner Brothers come and get them a record deal. We all going to the same studio, you know what I'm saying, everything. And everybody like, you know, Skip, the album music way better. They know why they won't even, you know, I've never even talked to an exec, you know, about my music. You know what I'm saying? I've never been set in office with them.
Wow. You know, Donnie B, you've been in this game, I know, about 20 years interviewing hip-hop artists. Have you seen one that made it?
Not as far as independent, maybe only one artist that I know that made it, and that was rapper Twisted Black.
But Twisted Black got a deal, but he never made it.
He made it as close as he could until he got into a whole bunch of different trouble. But you know what? This game, this business is crazy. You gotta know somebody at the right time, and then you gotta have a. It's all about a relationship too. Who do you have a relationship with? If you got a good relationship with the program director, a good relationship with certain people, it's all about who you know and how close you are with that person. A lot of people are not understanding that either. You got to have some kind of personal relationship. You know, certain people got a certain circle of people that they hang out with.
Mm-hmm. But you know,
so if you hung out with Bun B, if you hung out with certain people like that, well, 90% chance you're going to make it. If you hang out with somebody like Lil Wayne in that little circle, you're going to make it. Look at, what's her name, Nicki Minaj. She made it because she was hanging out with him. So it's all about who you hang out with.
But let me add something to that. Okay, but I understand that the hangout thing, but when you look at what they are investing in. What are they investing in? Are they investing in positive artists? Or are they investing in negative artists? Are they investing in a message? Are they investing in a message? Or are they continuing the same demise of hip-hop? You know what I'm saying? So why is it that R. Kelly doesn't have $400 million? Why is that the Isley Brothers don't have at least $1 million? He just went to jail for Texas, and he make great music. You know what I'm saying? Why is it Maze don't have a bunch of money in music? You know, you have to look at this stuff, man, and see what's going on. You know, they keep talking about all these guys selling so many CDs, but I promise you, every car that I get in, I ride with somebody, I see somebody, I don't even know where the record store is at. You understand what I'm saying? I don't even see nobody buying CDs. So, you know, they put their money behind who they want to put it behind to leave an impression, to put an impression on society. You know what I'm saying? I believe that. You know, I might be a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but, you know, I just don't believe that those guys sell that many CDs.
Well, you know what? No. And speaking of that's a twofold question coming up. First of all, the question becomes then, is the industry trying to send a negative image, a negative message to our people? And then, secondly, are they getting their sales from downloads? Because nobody's really going in the record stores anymore, but we do know of iTunes and all these other sources. Is it iTunes, y'all, that you can download music from?
iTunes, Rhapsody, Google, Amazon, it's a whole bunch of download sites. But, you know, me and the guy was talking about that, too, the other day. Why is it that every time, you know, we use those sources, we don't get that many sales? But, you know, say somebody else comes out, oh, he got a million sales, and nobody knows how he's not on TV, he's got nothing, you know what I'm saying? So,
but
you know, it's a lot of stuff.
Think about this. Everything that they say ain't always true. A lot of this stuff is all about hype.
Yeah.
I may be sitting here saying, oh, I get $1 trillion, but in reality, do I really get $1 trillion? So a lot of this stuff is all about the hype. That I have recognized in working with being around a lot of these major rap artists. They're not getting as much as we think they are.
Well, let me push it up, y'all, and I want to ask this question. You know, we're looking at the female artists, and that whole, you know, side of the industry seems to be shifting. And it seems like a female artist, in terms of a hip-hop artist, in my opinion, basically gets on stage and performs just like a stripper. So why is it that we're demanding that our female artists get up there and perform like strippers in order to perform a song? Or is that the industry telling them to do that or pushing them to do that? Or is this just the artists themselves going out and doing this?
Terry, it's an age-old thing. It started with Dick Gregory said the other day that he was actually the first black man to perform flat-footed because they wouldn't let black people perform. You could sing and dance, but you couldn't stand flat-footed and talk to white people.
Okay.
So the thing was, when he performed at the Playhouse Mansion, he performed at the Playhouse, he was a Negro comedian. That was his father. He said, whatever name you give me is not my name. As long as you have Negro Dick Gregory, that's my name.
Okay.
So the same thing is perpetuated, that we have these people wanting to see the exploitation of our black women still. So in order for them to do it, it is almost like a mandate within the contract, within the industry standard, because you see Beyonce, you see everybody out there, and, you know, Lady Gaga, you see everybody out there in bathing suits, basically. Even Destiny's Child, when they came back, they were all dressed the same, pretty close.
And, you know, and the thing is, when did that shift happen? Because most of the time, when you go, if you go and see a country music concert, you're not going to see her on stage like that. You know, if you go see, you're not going to see them like that. If you go see, you know, a lot of different genres of music in concert, you're not going to see them like that. So why is it that we've allowed them to lower the standards for our artists, and we accept that?
It's just like when Halle Berry got in the movie and got butt naked. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when Halle Berry got butt naked in whatever that movie was, she got butt naked in. You know, that's just like, you know, after that, you know, a lot of people lost out of respect. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people, they're just like putting a black man in a dress. You know what I'm saying? All that, you know, is designed to just demoralize them and make them look real cheap. You know, and so what happens is they have to keep on going. And basically, that's the moral contract that they sign when they get with these labels. When they are willing to do that, they're saying that no matter what, if record sales get low, I'm willing to do whatever it takes for us to make money. You know what I'm saying? That goes back to when people say, with the sacrifices, will you kill your son, you know what I'm saying, to get more money? You know what I'm saying? Well, you'll do anything, basically send yourself to the devil to make sure that this company makes money.
But
if you're not that type of company, you're going to do that. And if you're not the type of person that's willing to do that, they probably won't deal with it. That's why they exploit a lot of youngsters. Every time you see people trying to sign somebody, it's going to be somebody 20, 21, you know, that they can exploit, that they can use, that can make sign a contract and run around out there and push their message about dope or whatever message the companies want to push, you know. So
yeah.
That's
how we have to use the word everybody wants us to say, though.
You have to
use the word everybody wants us to say.
So what you have to understand is
the
modern-day slavery.
Yeah.
But what you have to understand is that the art is always an image. And so you have to go back to social engineering. Our community is very social engineering.
I'll mute it. You gotta do what, Flanagan?
This is Chili Most in Los Angeles. When you talk about music and film, like you're talking about Halle Berry, when she did that movie Monsters Ball and she got the Academy Award.
Right.
It's the image, the art, and music is not the image of the woman.
Oh, hold on a second. Somebody's got some background noise.
I don't know.
If you got background noise, can you mute it? Okay, go ahead, Chula.
Well, you know what I was saying is, just like Denzel, he's done all these movies, but he got the Academy Award for playing a crooked cop. And
right.
So they know that when you go down in history, art and music and film, it's all about the image and history, what they want black people to look like around the world. And just like this movie Lincoln that came out, everybody was raving about it. So they asked
okay,
me, Chili Most,
got some background noise again.
They asked me, Chili Most, did you see Lincoln? And I watched it, but the first thing I recognized was Frederick Douglass was not in the movie. How can you have a movie about Lincoln and Frederick Douglass not being it? So you got to realize that the images that they're putting out there they want you to see is the images that they want how black people look. That's why when you go around abroad, they think that we all call our women bees and hoes. They think that's how we call, you know, because that's what they see in the music and the images. And so this is a socially engineered by the people who's in control. It's a social engineering starting back in the 50s when Eisenhower said in order to break up the black family, we have to bring welfare in to get the father out of the house. And
but
give
when,
a woman.
When are we as black people, though, going to stop with the mentality that somebody's got to save us? Well, I see all these rap artists down buying basketball teams. First of all, these artists could take the same money and invest it in a major label and do the same thing that they're on somebody else's label, you know, helping make them money for. So I don't get it that why would you go into a genre you know nothing about and make your money, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with making money, but at the same time, if you have mastered the game of music and you know how this industry is run, why wouldn't you take your money and reinvest it and help your own people come up
mm-hmm.
in an industry you understand?
The companies he worked for wrote Miseducation of the Negro.
Mm.
And he told you that when you were miseducated, they can tell you you no longer have to sit at the back of the bus.
Yeah.
But there's something in the double helix of my DNA that make us want to go sit, think it's cool to be on the back of the bus.
And you know what's so bad about that, and I agree, we let them tell us what they think is good about what we do, and we also let them tell us what they think is bad. Now, sagging white people have not jumped on board with.
Images.
But have you ever noticed that anything we say in terms of slang, by the time we drop it, they pick it up? So it's like on one instance they'll say, oh, you know, those black people are so hood. You know, I mean, they're just so hood. But at the same time, the next thing you know, you hear a white person saying swagger. You know, you hear a white person using, you know, other terminologies that we've used. And so I think what it is we as black people got to learn who we are and what's acceptable for us. You don't need to keep trying to identify with somebody else to make us feel, you know, that we're okay. We need to get that together. And when I see our industry in terms of hip-hop, it looks like black people have lost who they were. it looks like black people don't know who they are. I mean, one minute you see an artist, you know, like a Nicki Minaj, and I don't follow Nicki Minaj, y'all. I just see her on shows, and I really don't understand what she's doing. But it really just looks like to me that at one minute she came out and she says, I want to be the next Lil' Kim. And then the next minute it looked like her image is starting to change, and she's saying, well, I want to be a black Lady Gaga. I mean, it just looks like she's confused with whatever it is, message that she's trying to send out there. Why are our artists confused? Why are the hip-hop artists so confused and letting people dictate their next move? Let's just say that. Anybody?
Can I say something about that? We have to look at the artist, because the artist did not get there to help the community. He was not paid to do music that was uplifting. He was paid to tear down the community. You got to look at how they got there. You know, so when you're asking a guy to do something that's out there element, you're saying no longer tear down the neighborhood with your dope lyrics. You know, when you've been made on dope lyrics, selling dope, killing people, you know, now we want you to turn this around and do something. They are out of their element, you know what I'm saying? And basically, you know, it's just like with athletes. You know, a lot of people don't know why athletes can't create businesses, because just because you have spending power doesn't make you an entrepreneur. You know what I'm saying? You're a guy that has spending power. You have somebody that's willing to keep putting money behind you, an entrepreneur that's willing to put money behind you, but you don't even know the ins and outs of businesses. You don't know the tendencies of business. You don't know, you know, about customers, you know, recreating business, forecasting business 10 years down the line. So these guys are not really businessmen. Those guys are guys that have a little bit of money to spend. But when it comes to black people need to empower people that are smart, people that are entrepreneurs that are in the rap business as well. And you never see those people get the opportunity. That's the problem. Jay-Z was never the entrepreneur. He was the rapper. You know what I'm saying? So P. Diddy wasn't the entrepreneur. He did an intern. You know what I'm saying? So those guys don't really know business like people think they do. They're just in the loop of money.
Let's talk about Jay-Z a little bit since we're there. Now, Jay-Z went to Cuba recently with his wife, Beyonce. And you know, per the rules, you know, you can't, as a citizen of this country, go and visit Cuba because they're not open tourism over there. But for whatever reason or however they got there, they got there. And so when they got back, you know, some members of Congress had a problem with it. And they openly stated, I want to know, per an investigation, how they got there, who let them go, who signed off on it, all this, that, and the other. That said, Jay-Z then went online and released something called an open letter. And the open letter was some lyrics that pretty much said, you know, in my opinion, y'all, I'm just, you know, kind of, you know, looking at the way it sounded or I took it. I'm a black man with some money, and I can go to Cuba. You know, I like Cubans, you know, and, you know, the world management didn't change, you know, and so as far as I'm concerned, you know, y'all stupid, y'all need to be students, you know, let me teach you something, y'all gonna learn, which kind of came off as kind of arrogant, if you will. So my thing is, for me, and this is just Kerry talking, nobody else, I think his privileges to the White House probably got revoked, and I think his whole deal with that NBA team is going to shift in terms of – and y'all tell me if y'all agree, because he was an owner in the team, but then he decided he wanted to be a sports agent, right? So then they told him, well, you can't be a sports agent and own your team. So then he said, okay, now sell your ownership in the team, and then you can be a sports agent. So then he sells his team, and then they come out later and they say, hey, you don't have a college degree. So you're not going to be able to be an agent for the NFL because you got to have a college degree. My question to y'all is, is this their way of saying, listen, you might have money, but you still can't do what you want to do in this country? Is that what they were saying?
Kerry, can I say something first?
Yeah.
This is AJ. Okay, first you have to go back to the first thing you brought up. You know, to being an ex-military person, I know how it is when you go into a country that's even if it's a signature battle with another country. There's a certain thing and a certain code that, as an American citizen, We didn't sign on it, but we are American citizens regardless if we're struggling in America, like the Iraqis told us when they had the prisoners over, Jesse Jackson winning freedom.
Okay.
He let them go because he said, hey, look, y'all got problems to deal with over there in America. Y'all go home while we deal with America. Y'all deal with y'all problems. But see, as a whole, this country is having problems with other countries, so you can't, as an American citizen, go to other countries and act like you're not an American citizen. See, to me, that's the border. That's the line right there. So all the other things is not a black issue or a white issue. It's an American issue. First thing.
Okay. But did they send him a message? Because in my opinion, what's going to happen is he's already sold his team. They're going to eventually come back and change the rules and say, you know what? You're going to have to hire a college graduate to be your agent because you don't have a college degree. That's just my opinion. I'll let y'all listen to Open Letter, and then y'all tell me what y'all think. But I just think maybe he went a little too far and didn't think it through before he went there. I think he wasn't totally aware of the fact that you can be friends with the president and still not be able to do whatever you want to do in this. I think that there's some other people have to be considered. Here we go, y'all. Did he go too far?
Yeah.
Anybody? Did he go too far? Chili Mose, did he go too far? Chili Mose.
I think he did.
Okay.
I think he did, too. You know what I think about it, because you know we talked about it last time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want you to tell him what we said, Dave, but Chili Mose first. Tell us, why do you think he went too far? Did we lose Chili Mose?
I think that's Skip.
Was that you, Skip?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, well, why do you think he went too far?
First of all, we have to learn that even though you have money, a lot of these guys haven't even been to high school. You know, you have to get educated first. Then you have to be politically educated. You know what I'm saying? Once you become politically educated, you know our allies, and you know our enemies. Dennis Rodman is the same way. He did the same thing. He went to North Korea and hung out with Kim Jong-un, and this man always talking about blowing America up. There's certain things you can't do. Even though we have our imbalance amongst us as white, blacks, and Mexicans, you still have a duty to, you know, stand up for your country. Your country didn't allow you to make $200 million or better. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, if that's our enemy, if Cuba's our enemy, then guess what? You know, that's my enemy too. You know what I'm saying? So you can't go to Cuba, man. You can go to the Jamaica. You can go, you know, to France. You can go to China. You can go to Russia. You cannot go engage war against your own country, man. You cannot do that, man. Not when they done, you know, gave you $200 million. If they say don't go to Cuba, skip, I'm good with it. You understand?
Yeah.
If I'd have made $200 million, man, I'm not going to Cuba. You know? So you just overstepping your bounds. You just being too arrogant, man. You just thinking that you can just step on anybody and anything. That's been your routine. So this move right here is going to sink you.
I think it is true. I think he will find that investigations will start opening up in terms of, you know, are your taxes paid on time? Are your taxes right? All those sorts of things. Like I said, with the team, you know, you had ownership one day. Now it's not okay for you to be an owner, and now you maybe you can't even be an agent, and you've already sold your team. I think things like that are going to start to happen, and I think they're going to affect both him and the wife. And I definitely don't think they're going to be going back to the White House. But Donnie B, what did you come up with? Do you think he went too far as well?
Well, I think he went too far. Not only with that, but my biggest concern is, you know, that I don't believe that President Barack Obama even had a discussion with him.
Oh.
That's why I really don't believe that. I believe that he really didn't care. Okay. He feel that I can do, like Stu was saying, he feel I can do anything because I got all this money. You can't tell you Negroes down here in America, nobody can tell me anything because I got all this money. I'm a billionaire. I'm up there next to Bill Gates, so I can do what I want to do. If I want to go and, you know, go to another country, I can do that because I got all this money.
Wow.
So that's you know, he got that high self-esteem about himself.
Okay.
So that's what I believe.
Okay.
And Donna B, it goes back to what you was telling me too, Donna B, about those pictures that they had released when they were sitting all in the presidential chair and taking pictures, him and Beyonce. Man, that's totally disrespecting authors, man.
Oh. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I forgot. I think it was, I want to say it was Jeezy who came out with a rap a long time ago that said, if you ever get caught up in a snatch, you know, don't call my name. Should he have even called the president's name in that rap and said that he had, like, White House clearance and that the president could chill with him on the beach?
Yeah.
Should he have drugged the president into that?
No, I don't think so. That's a snitch move. That's a dry snitch move, man. He threw him under the bus.
Is that what that was? Oh, it's Rod Vincent. Okay. Yo, let's start talking about this beef. Because you know what? This thing with Rick Ross and CDs is like all over everywhere. Everybody's talking about
it,
y'all.
Yes, it is.
You know, and y'all, I really don't know what to believe in terms of, you know, can Rick Ross come out of this? Because I think where I'm at on this is I think Rick Ross has truly, possibly painted himself into a corner because I think he's playing with a different mentality than, you know, how you beef with somebody in the rap game. And it's just beef, and y'all be hanging out at the, you know, at the award shows after the show, that kind of thing. But I think with these guys, it's a different mentality. And I don't know that Rick Ross responded right. So what we're going to do right now, y'all, because the one that scared me the most, listen, and they ain't even talking to me, was when the Gangsta Disciples from Alabama had something to say.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, when I looked in the eyes of this guy on this video, I was scared. And so we're going to play the Alabama Gangsta Disciples threatens Rick Ross. And so that's the one we're gonna put on. But just listen to this guy's voice. And if you can see the picture that's associated with the voice, it's even more scary. And he just looks like he is totally serious. But they are not going to give him a pass on this. Okay, check this out, y'all.
Not playing, Carrie.
Oh, no, I think that it's like an intro. And basically, their music, basically what you see when you first come onto the video is they're showing like a view of all of the disciples. And they're all geared up in their colors, and they're throwing up their signs. And they're letting you know when we're coming on camera and we're not even scared to say, we going to get you. Here we go.
What you paying this punk ass dude? Listen here, man. It's a bullshit. Nigga ain't no fucking boss. Nigga, this nigga got nothing to do. Motherfucker, I own a Pajero. Bitch is real G. This ain't got nothing to do with you and your fuck ass dude. Nigga, you walk around this bitch. Nigga, you ain't no fucking gangster, nigga. Nigga, we motherfucking gangsters.
Will tear him to shreds. That's saying Rick Ross painted himself in a corner. You got the North Carolina set, you got the Chicago set, you got the Alabama set. Everybody's saying check in. What can Rick Ross do at this point?
Quit music.
He can do what?
He can leave music alone, because anybody with common sense know that gang members don't do no plan. I mean, you can go from city to city and know that guys be getting bumped off every day. You know what I'm saying? That's not even in gang. So when you have those law gang members like those guys, man, you can't go to them cities unless you make peace with them guys, man. He can be arrogant all he wants. He can be arrogant all he wants, but this ain't TV. That ain't TV, though. That's not mainstream TV. That's the hood.
So, check him out. Should he pay him, or what should he do? And we lose Chili Mode. Chili Mode. Okay, I think we lost him.
Yeah, he gotta pay him. I mean the streets are real dangerous. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, just because you rapping and just because you on radio, that don't mean that the streets not real. The streets are very real. You know, I know in Houston, man, last week a couple of jackers that thought they was real bad. We got four of them. Got knocked out last week, and these supposed to be some real bad guys, man. When they get to put money up, man, somebody gonna grab the money.
You know, I talked to somebody yesterday who's a former of the Crips in Little Rock. He's totally straight now. Lavelle Jackson has paid his dues to society as far as, you know, what he did with the Crips. But I asked him about this, you know, and I said, what can Rick Ross do? And why do you think Rick Ross did this? And, you know, he really just said, you know, Rick needs to talk to those people. He felt like there's no way that Rick would have ever put his face inside that emblem unless Rick had talked to somebody. So if Rick had talked to somebody and become part of the gang, they wouldn't be after him that hard, would they?
Nah, he disrespected a lot of emblems, man. He disrespected the Masonic emblems. You know, he was going around just jacking people's swagger. You know, I actually interviewed Rick Ross, the drug dealer Rick Ross, ex-drug dealer Rick Ross, and, you know, he was telling me about how that happened with him and Rick, that's Rick Ross, you know, and he seemed like he one of those guys that, you know, not law about paying. On the streets, it's about paying. If you make a promise, you pay. You know, that's the saying on the street. You owe somebody, you pay somebody, you live to see another day. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he seemed like he got a track record of not paying, and on the streets, you got to pay. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to survive.
See, and you know, the thing is, one of the sets, and I don't remember which one of them, I think it was a Carolina set that has a YouTube video. They say on there, it may have been North Carolina, it may have not been, but they said that Rick Ross told them, gave them a phone number, and when they called the number, it was a bad number. You know, and so they said, you gave us a fake number. So does Rick Ross even get the seriousness of it? You know, we're going to play a little of the interview that he did on a radio station, and Rick basically said, I'm a boss. You know, I ain't scared. You know, I didn't cancel my tour dates because I was threatened. I canceled my tour dates because me and the promoter had some, you know, misunderstanding or whatever, and I didn't like the way he did business. So that's why I actually canceled my tour dates, but it wasn't because I'm scared, because I actually just left Chicago, you know, where the GDs originated at, and if I wasn't scared to Chicago, I ain't scared to go nowhere. You know, this is Rick Ross saying this on a radio station. And so does Rick not get the seriousness of this, AJ, or what do you think it is?
You know, see, there's a whole different era of, I guess, of people garnering respect. And I guess respect is an era thing. It's not something tangible. So you have people that think they're disrespected. I say, you see fights all the time from somebody in the club saying, hey, man, why are you looking at my girl?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she half naked, so I just saw her walk by. I thought I could see her breakfast. You know, and he mad, he ready, because he feel like that's disrespect. But that's what I'm saying. When everybody's disrespecting everybody, it's, okay, who got the biggest crew, who got the biggest thing? And I just think we're losing so many of our black boys in this ambiance of disrespect. And we're not even trying to teach them to be educated, to teach them to do the things that they need to do to be men, because they're not going to make it to the age of being a man.
I agree. If you just tuned in, you come to the station. I forgot where I was, I guess. If you just tuned in, you've come to the station tonight for the topic, is the price to be a hip-hop artist too high? Well, that's the topic tonight. Is the price to be a hip-hop artist too high? I mean, we're looking at, you know, things like the Illuminati, rumors that the Illuminati are actually, we're seeing beefing nonstop. We're seeing the controversy between Rick Ross and the GDs. So these are just some of the things we're touching on, you know, whether or not, you know, the darker-skinned female artists in the industry are bleaching their skin to kind of fit in with the lighter-skinned women in the industry. We're talking about the fact that, you know, there's like human sacrifices come up in terms of people who want to make $20 million or more have got to use do a human sacrifice with someone they love. We're talking about the sense. There's supposedly or allegedly a ritual that they do, a satanic ritual in which they take the music and put it in a circle and do spells over it to make you buy the music. Those are just some of the things we're going to be talking about tonight. So if you got a question or a comment and want to chime in on what we're talking about tonight, get on the phone lines and call us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Again, if you want to chime in on any of the topics we're talking about tonight, dial in at 347-850-8390. Y'all, we're just going to touch on a little bit of this Rick Ross interview because it's kind of long, and let you hear some of the things that Rick Ross said. I think Rick Ross said too much, but y'all can be the judge. But I think that Rick kind of went out here and forgot where he was and who he was talking about, and I think that that maybe, you know, it made it worse. I could be wrong, but it just looked like some of the things that he said in the interview could have possibly made the situation go from bad to worse. So we're going to try to play that in just a second. But you be the judge. Y'all tell me once y'all hear it. Did Rick Ross say too much when he was on this station 99.3 or something? I think it was a Miami station. And he was being interviewed by this female a DJ, and she began to ask a question, and he just heads her off. I don't know if he didn't want her to ask the question in a certain way, but he headed her off, and then he just started ad-libbing, and it looks like he was at 99 Jam in Miami, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And so I just think maybe he may have said too much, but y'all tell me. Here we go. Can y'all hear him?
I can't really hear it.
Okay. That's going to be too low then. But basically in the interview, Rick Ross just, you know, she began to ask him, you know, about, and he completely cuts her off. And when he cuts her off, he seems to be heading in a direction of stopping her from asking him more questions. And I think what he meant to do was kind of shut it down, but in reality what he ended up doing was probably saying more than he intended to say. And so he just kind of said things like, I'm the $50 million man. Well, if somebody was asking me to cut a check, I definitely wouldn't tell him how much I made last year. So I thought that was like maybe something that Rick shouldn't have said. And then he went on to say, you know, that he had been in Chicago and that he wasn't afraid. And then he made some comments to the effect that, you know, he said that they weren't real disciples, you know, which I, you know, he said real disciples, you know, don't do it like that. And so he just kind of said that he wasn't afraid, and I thought maybe telling them that they weren't real disciples wasn't so smart either. And so I just thought maybe he's at a point now that, you know, if he pays them, who all do you pay and how often? And then if he doesn't pay them, what's going to be the end result? And y'all tell me. Donnie B.
I am. Well, you know, like me and you was talking about this last time, I think one of the biggest problems going to be with him is if he starts, like you were saying, if he starts paying one set, he's going to have to end up paying the next set and the next set. And this can keep going on and on and on. So his best bet, like Skill was saying, is to get the heck up out the entertainment business here.
Just leave it alone.
And leave it alone. And he may want to go overseas.
But they can go overseas.
He's definitely gonna have to get out the visa and then maybe go overseas for a while until things calm down.
Wow, Chili Mose, you are doing a stop the violence. Stop the violence campaign. Maybe you ought to jump in and help Rick Ross.
Well, you know, I have been hoping for brother Rick Ross. He probably don't know who I am as of yet, but you know, we must learn how to agree to disagree in a nonviolent way. But you know, a lot of times, ego and pride gets in the way of making sound decisions. And if you got to start, first of all, if these brothers start making decisions that God wants them to make, instead of what man wants them to make, they wouldn't be in the situation in the first place. See, this international Stop the Violence campaign that we got is backed by ministers. It's the main people that I'm going to. And on May the 26th, we're looking to have 10 million ministers worldwide preach some of Stop the Violence in Love with Love. But, you know, it's a sad thing when men can't sit down like men and work out their differences. But maybe if they put God first, then they would be able to work it out.
Well, I agree. But, you know, when you look at the Rick Ross saga, and you look at it for what it is, Rick is doing something that he probably, because, you know, Rick, I understand, was a correctional officer before he became a rapper. So his whole image of being a drug dealer and pushing these kilos and doing some of this other stuff he raps about never really happened in terms of his life. Now, he may have been rapping about somebody else's life, but it wasn't about his life. So it's an industry and such that you have to pretend to be something that you're not. So are they making these rappers or pressuring these rappers to come off hard, tougher than life? Is that the industry or is that the individual rapper?
Well, you know, I would say that there's a lot of studio gangsters.
Ooh.
It's not their gangsters. And so, you know, a guy can go to a studio and take a pen and be the most violent, hard guy in his mind, has a perception, and it's all an illusion. And so, you know, these guys are, you know, if you want to talk about the history, you have to see what's on the streets and what record companies think that would sell. And once socially conscious music starts selling, then the industry will go about that. But they want to guide this illusion and control the mindset of people. And that's what this international Stop the Violence campaign is all about, changing the mindset of people across the country and around the world. We want to change the mindset of 7 billion people. I just got out of a meeting before we came on here about changing this mindset. But the guys like Rick Ross, I don't know the brother. If he played his music, I wouldn't know because I really don't follow that. I'm following my own path as of time, but I just wish him the best, and I hope these brothers can work it out. And I hope that they, not saying that they don't have God in their life, but I hope they put God in their life and sit down like men and put God first. They put God first, and they'll be able to work out their differences.
I just want to say this. From talking to a lot of the major rappers and a lot of the independent artists as well, a lot of times they may not even live that lifestyle, but they paint a story when they're doing their rap and when they're doing their lyrics. That some of them, if you look at them on the street, they don't even live that lifestyle. So, but they paint that story because that's what people want. Okay, it's just like when you're looking at the stuff on TV. Okay, we know that what trash sells. Okay, trash sales. If you go and do something, you know, a positive thing on TV, that's not going to sell. Same way with these reality shows. Think back and look at these different reality shows. Reality show is sales because people want to hear that. I was talking to T-Pain Mama a while back, and T-Pain and Mama wanted to do a positive programming, and they pitched the idea to the major networks. Well, the major network said, no, we don't want that, but we will if you can do a trade-in and we can put your son and we can do a behind the scenes on how your son lived his life, then we'll put that on national TV because that's what sells. So the same way with that, to say that the music, it has to sell. So, you know, that kind of junk sells. So a lot of these artists may not even live that type of lifestyle, but because they have to tell a story about how other people really, really want to see it. And that's
but you know what? Is it a case in which Rick Ross just got called out on his, but it's been happening forever and a day. Rick Ross just didn't understand the street and how it is really run. Because other artists have rapped about being hard, and I mean, is it the case that nobody has ever rapped about being a gang member or something before? And I mean, it's just amazing that Rick got called on this, and nobody else in all these years have been called out like that. So did Rick just not know the rules of the street? Or is it that for some reason he just picked on the wrong game?
No, Rick picked on a bunch of games.
Oh, did he?
Go ahead, Jim.
Rick picked on a bunch of games. Rick used Rick Ross here. He just used a bunch of people's images and didn't give them no money, didn't remain loyal to them. You know, that's what he did. But one thing people don't understand and they have to believe is karma. Karma is real. When all these rappers got out here and created this atmosphere for everybody else to get killed, you know what I'm saying? It was going to eventually come back to them. When you go to the studios, everybody that owns the studio is either a dope dealer or either the producers or little bitty guys, nerd guys that mama bought them pianos. You know what I'm saying? So, when you look at the music industry, you know, somebody that's really from the streets, like I tell people, all my pain when I was in the streets, I'd be a crying rapper if I was really talking about some of the stuff that happened to me when I was little. You know, some of that stuff I don't want to rewind. So, you know what I'm saying? A lot of those rappers, when they get to hearing about other rappers' pain, they get the venom fly out their mouth. You know what I'm saying? And especially if you're a drug dealer that's actually in the game, you don't want people to know that you're selling bricks and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So you're not going to even talk about that. So, you know, we're in a society where, you know, going back to, you know, the guy that wants to do the nonviolent thing, I forgot his name, I'm sorry, but, you know, you can't ask a rapper to take over the movement of peace. You understand what I'm saying? If the rapper was the guy that caused the problem, you can't turn around and say, well, hey, I need you to solve the problem. No, that's not going to happen like that. If a person gets sick, you take them to a doctor. You know what I'm saying? So this going to be up to the people that are leaders to lead. Our president has to be a president, you know what I'm saying? Our pastors have to be pastors. Our moms have to be moms. Our dad has to be dad. Our families have to be
that's
family.
Right.
And that's the only way you're going to solve that problem. You know, we could talk about the problem all that, but when you get to fight, talking about you were ready to fight, you know, you put your gloves on. That's what he did, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot of these kids say, live fast, die young. You better die.
Yes. Let me ask you this real quick, Skip, because we definitely got to see what's going to happen with this guy. Do you think that this guy, Rick Ross, need to either pay up or do we need to try to convince these gang members that you know, do we need to apologize to the gang members? What do we need to do at this present time? Because if the dude
right now, he's going to have to die. I mean, it's almost to the point where he's going to have to quit rapping. No, he's going to die. You know, it's just like I never thought that there'd be a day where people would be saying that they don't like Lil Wayne. You know, I went to jail for like 3 months, and I was in there, and it was like these people were just hollering about they don't like Lil Wayne. I'm like, what did he just say? I mean, I never thought it would be a day where, you know, black folks have a problem, man. People not looking at it. We have a mental illness with our new kids, man. You know, those kids are just, you know, it's just like most of the people in society. It's just like me, man. I got a whole, my resume like a diplomat, but, you know, people are not going to run to me because I don't have that big, big money to put behind me. Well, you know, people either love you for being on the top or they love you for being on the bottom. If you're in that middle part where they can either help you succeed or make you fail, 9 times out of 10, they're going to push you down. So until we as black folks get to a point where we can make decisions without looking at people, you know, based on their money and helping people just because they're good people. You know, even in the Bible, it talks about, you know, judge a man by his works, you know, just like people run around talk about Christian, you know what I'm saying? You know, everybody's not a Christian. Everybody's trying to become Christian-like, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you have to judge a person by the carry, and that's hard for black folks to do, to sit up here and just say, hey, man, you know, Rick Good, or even ask them to practice diplomacy. You know, what they need right now is diplomacy, but who knows how to practice diplomacy if you're in a game? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's gonna be a tragic end to that.
You know what? And I just found Rick Ross interview where it's going to be louder. And y'all tell me, because you know what? I think Skip is on to something. And as I was listening to him, I totally
Puff Daddy, everybody that came out, just everybody from 305 and Dade, Broward County. Man, the feeling is just, it just feel like that's everything I've worked for really my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
My first headlining tour, and, you know, I brought it back to Dade County and we did it big, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to everybody that came out and supported that, and most definitely salute JT Money, you heard me?
That's love right there. The first leg of the tour was definitely successful.
Yeah.
Second leg of the tour, had to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. Well, I canceled the rest of the tour due to the promoter wasn't really handling his business, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He canceled a date of mine. I was going to Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
And I was really a few hours outside of the market when I realized.
Of Arizona?
Tucson.
Okay.
I want to say, I believe it was Tucson. This was maybe a week and a half ago. And, I just made a call to the dude, Sean G, and just let him know that ain't how we move. Let's just communicate a little better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So the other day I woke up and realized two more dates had been canceled. So I just felt like that was some power that I needed to take away from homie. So I canceled the rest of the dates
mm-hmm.
that I had arranged with him. But originally, the tour was from November 2nd to December 5th.
Okay, fifth.
That's why we ended it in Miami. But, you know, he brought another, you know, one point something worth of, you know, business to the table. So we added those extra dates. And, you know, once they began to unravel, I just shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And never was it due to any threats. Or,
I was just about to say, because,
Let me cut, not to cut you off, but let me explain something to you. You know, I'm a certified man. I am a real boss. And this is something that everybody need to understand. Gangsters move in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Gangsters move in silence. And in situations like that, I just remember some old school Dade County gangster told me a long time ago that any dude could stand in the crowd with 30, 40 dudes and everybody real,
mm-hmm.
everybody trill, everybody about that life, everybody gangster. You understand? But when the choppers come out, everybody fold. But more importantly, anybody that understand anything about GDs, because this is what they're supposed to be about. Anybody that understand anything about GDs, it's all about growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that know anything about the old man, Mr. Hoover, that's why I put him in my song, because I respect his scriptures, his philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about support. It's all about coming up. It's just not about somebody who, you know, one sucker or somebody that got a personal vendetta, and that's something that we gonna address, you understand? But
mm-hmm.
other than that's not the case. I was just in Chicago a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the birthplace of the GDs. And if I go to Chicago to handle my business like I did, I have no problem going to North Carolina or
right.
South Carolina, where
right.
the ladies are brown skin, brown eyes, they got nice curls, and they make the best apple pie. So don't ever get it twisted.
Okay.
Ricky Rose is a boss. And not to cut anybody off, but I'm certified worldwide. I could put 1,000 gangsters in any hood, but that ain't what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to make stars. I'm here to make icons. I'm here to break records. I'm here to be Grammy nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing. So, and to me, rich is gangster. Loyal is gangster. You understand? Family is gangster. If that's not gangster, I don't want to be gangster. I'm a boss. I went from nothing to being a $50 million man. So don't never get it twisted. Sean G wasn't handling his business. You can't cancel a Ricky Rose show without Ricky Rose permission. And that's what he did with Tucson. Y'all get on the internet. But on the internet, my show was canceled. I didn't like the way it moved, so I went to Vegas for 2 days. If anybody got Instagram, get on my Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see me getting a massage on one of those Instagrams. I was in the Palms out in Vegas. I made the best of the night. You understand? But that's why the shows were canceled. And if I go to Chicago, I just want to say that again, I go anywhere. So don't get it twisted. And when you pull up the footage of me walking out in Chicago on the stage, with the chinchilla dragging on the floor, you let me know if that's the swagger of somebody that's in fear of their life. And you holler back at Ricky Rose. And furthermore, I want to say that I salute Mr. Larry Hoover. I salute the beautiful Miss Wendy, who I spoke to recently. She's very honorable. She's very intelligent. Shout out to young Larry. We're going to clarify that, but that's what bosses do. And what's sad about this is that You know, in the old school days, not even saying this the case, because I believe this is not even the case with this situation, but just anybody who get on the internet and do that. That's what the rapper's supposed to be doing to the gangsters. We call that dry snitching. That's what we call that. The rapper's supposed to be in the water flapping their arms, not the other way around, but these are the times that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So don't never get it twisted. Self-made, and when I say self-made, that's what we about in Dade County. I don't care who you claim. I don't care what you throw up. That's all love. But when you get in that cell, you get by yourself, you got to be self-made, and you got to be trill. You got to be your own man. And that's what I represent when I scream self-made. Dade County, that's what we about down here in Dade County. So if you screaming cut a check, we need a check, ain't no checks getting cut. Ain't never no checks getting cut.
Well,
I don't play those games.
Okay.
I consider that extortion. We don't play like that. This Dade County. You understand? This is what we about, 305 in my yayo. So y'all Google up. Y'all get online. All the blogs and sites that rock with Ricky Rose, you pull up my footage of being in Chicago when I walked out with that $40,000 black chinchilla. You understand? I told them, cut the music off. I wanted them to just look at me for a little while. You heard me? Look at my beard. Look at the coat. Look how I walk. And it ain't no disrespect. I'm here to get money. That's to me what's gangster. Rich is gangster. You understand? Wealth is gangster. Power is gangster. Loyalty is gangster. That's gangster. We done seen too many so-called gangsters go to prison and bring tear the whole community up.
Mm-hmm.
So we ain't on that. So I salute every set. Whatever you doing to get money, I salute you, but take advantage of whatever it is you're doing. You understand? And it is what it is. Ricky Rose.
And on that note, you address that like a boss.
Now, let's get on some Grammy talk.
We are. Congratulations.
Congratulations. We Grammy nominated.
Here's song number
we Grammy
six,
nominated.
Baby, two chains.
What's up?
Yes, Hey, y'all. That was Ricky Rose, a.k.a. Rick Ross. Did he go too far?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. If he keeps that up, he's going to be... I don't want to say it, but he's going to be... He's not going
to
be... He's going to be a dead loss.
He's going to be R.I.P. One thing about the streets, if you know about the streets, is they don't... It don't have to be today. It don't have to be next year.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? When you get it,
all
you
right.
get it. You know what I'm saying? And he playing, man. I'm serious. He really is playing, man. You cannot do it. You can't be on TV talking and playing with them, man. These streets is real. You got people that will take the money, man. I'm telling you.
Ooh.
You got people who, you put 40 beans up, then watch somebody grab it. I'm telling you, man. The streets is so real, man. They got, you know, listening to it and just, you know, coming from another, you know, viewpoint, somebody that's just, you know, anti-violence, anti-that gangster rap music where you promoting all this stuff. You know, got everybody out here on pins and needles because you're promoting dope and you're going along with the conspiracy. You know, you get what you reap what you sow, man. And one thing about it, man, you know, every bully has his day. Even a bully get beat up. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you keep on putting it out there like you're a boss. You a boss or what? I don't even understand why they be hollering about their bosses. How are you a boss and you work for somebody?
But you know what? One thing I thought was like suicide in what he just said is sure. If somebody is trying to ask me for money, I am not going to tell them that I'm wearing a $40,000 coat, that I'm a $50 million man. I'm just saying because, you know, these people are saying you owe us the money, cut a check, and then you're telling them I'm boss and wealth is boss, and I'm a boss. I mean, it just... It seems like you're taunting them just a little bit, and I don't know if that's what he meant to say. I'm really of the belief that Rick Ross got on that interview and obviously lost his focus. It's way too much. Maybe he thought he should
thing,
every thought that popped in his head, and looks like he did, and obviously that was probably not the right thing to do. That's just my belief. There's no way in the world anybody could have got me to do that interview and say what Rick Ross said, knowing that there's, like, I don't know how many videos out there with people saying you owe us money and you need to check in. Hey, Jay Hughes, go too far.
But this is what I was going to say, though. Another thing, that's a protection move.
That's a what?
That's a protection move. If you can try snitch on the gang members, too, at the same time.
conscious conversation for somebody that's used to getting money from somebody that doesn't know what they want to do.
Yeah.
That's like you going to your job. You are a secretary, and they didn't want you to be a manufacturer. They said, look, we're going to pay you the same money, but you want to go in the plant. We want you to go in the plant. So you're going to look around and try to find the easiest job in the plant to do because you're used to making this money. You go to a job because that's what you're used to. And I'm saying we are just that hungry. We are just that manipulative.
Okay, y'all, we're down to our last 32 minutes in the show, and listen, we got a lot of ground to cover and a lot of ground to make up on. But if you just tuned in, we're talking about the topic, is the price to be a hip-hop artist too high? With some of the things that's going on in the industry, has it changed so much that maybe someone who's starry-eyed, bushy-tailed and wanting to be an artist, you know, maybe they need to reexamine whether or not the price is just too high to become an artist right now? Oh, y'all, let's talk a little. By the way, if you want to chime in on tonight's topic, give us a call at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. If you want to chime in, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Okay, y'all, let's talk about this music, in which I'm hearing that the industry has a satanic influence. And I have seen things on YouTube and on other places on the web where they're claiming that take your CD or your music, and they put it in the middle of the floor, and they do satanic rituals around your music in order to cast spells on it so people will buy it. I don't believe there's any truth to that.
But, Carrie, you used to be able to play a Prince record backward, and he was singing to the devil.
I mean, you said what?
It was always said you could play a Prince record backwards, and he was singing to the devil or some devil lyrics or some other. I'm saying, so this is the first time that you've heard anything like this. But
right.
So we can't dispel everything as false information.
Right.
But you cannot accept everything as the truth.
I agree. But the thing is, though, if that is the case, I would not want to be influenced by anything that had a spell put on it and made me listen to it just because it had a spell put on it. I would hope that I'm listening to
it. But how would you know?
Well, I mean, you know what? Let's say this. You need to pray for discernment. I mean, ask God to help you. Because, I mean, it's certain artists in the industry right now that you're hearing their names associated with, you know, devil worship and human sacrifice and all these sorts of things. And so you wonder, you know, when you hear things like people have to sell their soul to the devil in order to make $20 million or more. And this is a quote I got from Professor Griff. On one of the videos that I saw he put on YouTube, he said, if you want to be an artist making $20 million or more, you got to sell your soul to the devil. You know, and so that said, you know, where did he get that from? Is that firsthand knowledge?
But are they still meeting at the crossroads? There's a couple of answers I need before I can answer your question.
Okay. Is a couple what you need?
A couple of answers I need because, see, this is not the first time this has been going around because, you know, who was that, the blues man, I'm trying to think of his name, met at the crossroads, and that's, they did a couple of movies about it because that's what he told everybody, not that it did, but it made him popular and he was performing everywhere because he said he didn't learn how to play guitar, he made a deal with the devil at the crossroads.
But see, I think it was Jimi Hendrix or somebody who said that they used to, I think, use heroin or some type of drug and hallucinate and do those kind
of
things and play
that
with the devil.
Purple
didn't they
Purple
say, didn't he say
that
in his huh?
Purple Haze was a song about him using drugs and acid and... Because it was always the rockers and the artists that could handle the hard stuff.
Okay.
You know, because it was like, okay, we're gonna do this. We're making this money. Don't have nothing to do with it. Let's go buy some cocaine and do some drugs and do this. The movie stars are doing it. The drug addicts are doing it. Sly and the Family Stone was probably one of the major persons because I went and saw Sly a couple of times at Houston Jazz Festival. He played half a song and fell off the piano stool.
Whoa.
And they helped him back up. He played a couple more songs and they just carried him away. He can help, but what I'm saying is, it's always been a drug thing in the artist, and it was like a free willing thing, like it's gonna make you be more creative because that was a Sigmund Freud concept.
But the thing is, And one thing I would say to any aspiring artist, if you're listening tonight, first of all, anytime you make a deal with the devil, you're going to come up short. I'm just being honest. I mean, he comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and we know that he's a liar. So any deal he makes, he's not going to honor his side. And so I think it's kind of like he sells to us a mirage for the most part. It looks it's way down the road, and he gives you a list of instructions as to what's going to happen by the time you get there. But I think that pot of gold is down at the end of the road. You never get there. I think you make money that you're never going to spend. I think right. When you sell your soul to him, you never get what he promised.
But what do you really believe?
I'm going to let everybody else talk, Carrie. The coldest line I ever heard in my life as a poet was in a Batman movie.
What is that?
Because the Joker said, "You ever dance with the devil in the cold moonlight?"
Hmm. Wait a minute, say what?
You ever dance with the devil in the cold moonlight? But it was a scene, the setup. And we said, I'm like, that is a tight line.
Hey. I mean, I just don't know if people really get when you're talking about making a deal with someone, always go into an agreement knowing or hoping that you're going to get out of it what you've been promised. And it is just like 100%. I say this with 100% certainty, you're never going to get whatever he promised you. I think he can build it up, and you look like you're going to get it, but I don't think you're ever going to see it. So when we're hearing things like artists are having to sacrifice loved ones in order to reach superstardom in the industry, that's crazy.
I believe it. I believe it.
You believe it?
Oh, yeah. I was in Hollywood last year, and they wanted to turn my book into a movie. And, you know, I went down there. I met Robert Carlsberg and some other movie guys. And I was in the room, and I did my pitch. My pitch was excellent. Everybody in the room just knew I was going to get the movie deal. We were supposed to Skype. Mary De Rivera, she had got a new movie company, that's a production company that she was starting. And whoever they chose was going to be able to talk to Mary De Rivera and everything. And, I mean, everything was going well. But then Robert Carlsberg got up there and said, "Well, you know what?" He said, we really don't pay that much money, but we got $335,000. And they had a black Mercedes out in front, AMG kit, everything. He said, "But some people really want too much money, but we got what we need is, we need and The Help was out at the time. He said, "We need a movie like The Help, or we need something with a man in a dress." I was like, "What the hell?" I was like, "What the hell?" So I went back to my room and I was tossing the turn. I called my partner. I said, "Man, they want a movie with a slave movie or a man in a dress. Man, I don't have none of them right now." He said, "Well, kid, what you going to do?" I said, "Man, I'm not going to pitch that. I'm going to pitch the movie that I got." And I pitched that movie and I came back home with nothing.
Wow. So is do it their way or you get nothing?
You know, that's basically. They want, that's when they came out with the Django movies, the Lincoln movies, and all those movies, painting that certain image, you know. But I knew what was coming next, so they told me Disney was there. A lot of big-time movie companies was there, you know what I'm saying? I saw how they engaged, so I was like, wow, it's true, you know what I'm saying? So it's true.
Well, let's get into the fact, and I believe there's some truth to it. You know, a lot of people say it's a conspiracy theory to think that the Illuminati has infiltrated hip hop, and the Illuminati, if you research it, is basically a secret society of really old money. I mean, really, really old money. And so a lot of people say it's impossible to think that they are with hip-hop because, first of all, those guys don't make enough money to be a part of this clique. And the fact that, you know, kind of blood, you know, that these people are part of, I think they call it blue blood. Is it blue blood they call it? Is it blue blood when you're really, really rich? Is that what they call it?
I don't even know about that one.
Okay, they're really, really rich.
You missed me on that one.
I forgot what they call it, but you have to have some kind of special DNA, let's just say that, to be a part of that clique. So is it possible that the Illuminati is a part of hip-hop? Or is that just something that the people have made up that's not true?
Well, when you look at an industry making that much money, they don't really have to be a part of it to be a part of it. They just have to be an entity that's funding, that's just reaping the repercussions on the front end and the back end of the expenditures in hip-hop.
Okay.
Y'all always have middleman and you have frontman and you have all these other things that's an industry standard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
So it don't mean that what they're saying is false. It just means that you're not going to be able to find the truth. And there's
okay.
a difference.
Okay. And see, when all these, well, let me ask you this. When we're talking about the Illuminati, there's certain signs that, or hand gestures that they use, body language that they use. And so when we see some of these rappers basically wearing skulls and bones and different using, you know, the pyramid signal with the eye in it, and y'all know who I'm talking about, and all of that. Well, let me ask you this. If you're not a part of something satanic, I'll tell you something that an atheist friend told me that's a Mason. David told me this. He said, that stuff, when you put on things that have images of skulls and bones and stuff like that, those things have spirits attached to them. Spirits.
Hmm.
So it is not even wise to wear those type of clothing because there's other things going on besides just the image that you see in front of you. So that said, I would venture to say if you're not actually part of something satanic and you're not worshiping the devil, I think what you're doing is inviting him to come and keep company with you. And I think we all know.
You have a pentagram around your neck there, huh?
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm just saying. Now, this is what somebody told me.
No, I'm with you because I'm in agreement. But the pyramid with the eye, see, when you start going historically back, that was in the dynastic periods in Africa where this was a sign of Ra and other things. I'm saying we've graduated and we've changed and made it other things, but that doesn't make it the thing that we've made it today. That doesn't take the origin of it from it. But I understand the Illuminati, so, I mean, is as real as anything else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think, so when you're playing with images and stuff like that, it's just like anything else. If you don't know what you're dealing with, you ought not mess with it. So some of the artists that I see throwing up these hand signs, the Illuminati signs, and wearing the static images on their clothes, I think you're opening yourself up. You're being like a portal to open yourself up to allow those type of spirits to enter you. That I really believe. And so I think
that is true, yeah.
Yeah. And so I really believe that they're playing with fire. If they're not seriously worshiping the devil, if they're not careful, they will be. Because even though they may be playing with him to sell records, he ain't playing with them. That's just that.
Carrie, the most horrible way to transcend this conversation
uh-huh.
is the same thing. You know, when you go, you have people playing church.
Mm.
So when you go to church and the drums kick in, and then you have the hallelujah chorus singing in the background, and you got the spirit dancers up on the side, and then you start the hallelujah talk with the people, and you have the three or four people hollering and shouting, speaking in tongues. All these people that's there for the show get the feeling that they are part of the show.
Right.
And they start speaking in tongues and dance. They feel that spirit. They feel it. But see, we all need some type of inspiration, some type of motivation in our life. If you can't create it yourself, you're looking for it elsewhere. So every now and then, you're going to find it somewhere. Not that you're going to stay there and keep it. You're going to find it because that motivated you further. But we have everything we need inside of us from the beginning. People just don't know how to go get it.
Absolutely. Yo, you know what? And Dirty B has got to leave us at 9:45 to go do his show. Dirty B, thank you so much for your participation tonight.
Thank you, Karen.
Show, man.
I really
appreciate
enjoyed
you.
This conversation. This is really, really a great show.
Thank you, Dirty B. We're gonna play into the death of Whitney Houston, Aaliyah, and Michael Jackson as we close out tonight. Now, one thing I really kind of saw with Whitney Houston, and I could be very wrong, but this is what I saw Whitney Houston fell into. I think as an artist, you have to be careful because at some point you may be worth more dead than alive. And I think once Whitney Houston's voice was understood to never really going to be coming back, let's just say it. And we don't know what could happen down the road. But just by all appearances, she was never going to be the songstress that she was at one time. So that said, I think at this point, if there is a such thing as a human sacrifice, and they do knock you off to get your money, I think Whitney Houston would have been the perfect candidate. I think because she has made more money probably dead than she did alive at this point. Does anybody agree with that?
Well, I kind of agree, but you got to put Michael Jackson in the same conversation because Michael owns a larger percent of Sony than Sony does.
But you know what? Michael Jackson got on an interview. If you want to put Michael Jackson in, Michael Jackson got on an interview prior to his death, and I don't know why he was on. I don't know what the occasion was. He was on a stage, and it's on YouTube if somebody wants to Google it. But he was on the stage, and he began to tell him how Clive Davis was a devil. And how, you know, he had one more record to do, and he was out of his contract. He began to say things like, you know, I outsmarted him. You know, I'm going to leave here with the rights to all of my music. You know, I'm smarter than they thought I was. Well, shortly thereafter, Mike came up dead. You know, and a lot of people believe Mike was murdered. You know, and so, again, Michael Jackson probably will make more dead than he did alive, and he made a lot of money alive.
No, he won't make more, but other people have access to the money made dead.
Yeah.
But see, I think the thing about Mike is that Michael stopped playing their game.
Oh, yeah. Right. He realized what the game
OJ
was.
O.J. Simpson, too. O.J. Simpson owned 100 AM. You know, he got a little... Everything that happens for a money reason, you know, not necessarily about the individuals, about the money and the leverage that they might have. O.J. Simpson was rich, man.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know. But see, I think, I'm sorry, who was that?
No, I was good.
Okay, I think what happens, though, at a certain stage of the game, I think they look at you and say, you know what? And it's kind of like I always think about the movie Malcolm X. And if you remember the scene in the movie Malcolm X, Malcolm X is in the park with all these Muslim brothers. And the police captain is standing there talking to him. And then they decide they were going to march. But after Malcolm X talks to the police captain, they decide that they're not going to march. Or Malcolm decides that they're not going to march. And he raises one hand in the air and he snaps his fingers. And all the brothers turn and they start marching away. And the captain of the police department said to the other police officer, that's an N-word with too much power.
Yeah, he said that's a nigga with too much power. But see, the thing is, we still have niggas in America with too much power.
But see, I think what happens is exactly what's happening to Jay-Z. I think that when you get to that point where they feel that you think you got too much power and you think that you're more than they feel like you should think, then they feel like they need to knock you down a notch.
No, sorry,
and Jay-Z
said
that in this
song.
Because when you start making too much bread, they want to jam you up.
No, Carrie, they will wait. They will wait for you to make your own mistake.
Yeah.
See, they don't make you make mistakes. They let you make your own and then capitalize on you making your own mistake to where you can't recover and blame it on somebody else. And that was the trip to, that was like Rodman. See, Rodman went and talked to, you know, talked to my man in Korea. He was sitting there chilling. But Rodman had, you know, he had pink hair. He went downtown in a wedding dress on a motorcycle talking about he was marrying himself. It wasn't weird about Rodman. Jay-Z is a different story.
I think it becomes...
Rodman got kicked off The Apprentice the next day.
Rodman did?
Yeah, Rodman got kicked off the Apprentice. He got Donald Trump fired him the next day when he came back.
But I think there was a message there. You're right. The message was you acting like you one of us.
Yeah, they fired him. He got fired then. I think he broke. He's getting broken now. You know, the repercussions are real, man. You know what I'm saying? The repercussions are real when you get out of line, man. That money will turn to zero quick.
And see, I think that's really what can happen. I think, like AJ just said, they'll let you make your own mistake. And I hate to put this person in because they're not in the hip hop world at all. But I think Oprah went through that. I think what happened with Oprah is Oprah was fine until she got on TV and said, "I'll openly endorse Barack Obama for president." And I think she lost some viewers then. And I think she lost a whole lot more when Barack Obama won. And she came on her stage with red, white, and blue balloons and flags and said, today is the greatest day I have ever done in television. You know, we have, you know, Barack Obama is our president, the first black president. And I think that turned off a whole lot of people.
Now, wait a minute, Carrie. See, what you're missing is, see, Oprah had planned when she was leaving her show long before she left. She had already bought a network.
Right.
She was waiting for the network to come. So she had everything planned out. So she didn't lose anything. She actually gained more power.
But you know what? I'll go here with you. You're right. She was planning to leave, but for years she said she was planning to leave and she never set a date. But the viewership dropped off quite a bit. But pay attention. Her own network has never gotten even close to what she did as far as her viewership when she was with, what is it, ABC? ABC.
TBS.
Yes. No, but that has nothing to do with her political affiliation. That just has to do with the channel, the network.
No, but I'm talking about the viewers. A certain segment of her viewers tuned her out when they said, wait a minute, we like
but
your...
they weren't going to that network anyway.
But no,
people,
no, 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 listen to me.
Stuck.
No, I'm talking about in terms of losing viewership. She lost She lost the white female, a lot of the white female audience is what I'm... She lost him because they didn't have a problem with Oprah telling them what to wear and what her favorite thing was and how she could influence them to do things like that. But they did have a problem with Oprah being a black female telling them who to vote for.
Right.
But that's the American way. Now, that's the American way, but, you know, there's some things you can't do anything about. But I think in Oprah's situation, I think she gained more notoriety because, see, when you have $1 billion, you don't even have to have two. When you have $1 billion, it's hard for you to record a loss or notice a loss of your funds in the structure of the American way, the way investments go. So as far as her losing $500,000, Tiger Woods gave up almost $700 million. He was the first athlete to make $1 billion, and he gave his $700 million to umpire, somebody that was keeping his children that he decided, you know, somebody he married. She was keeping another golfer's children when Tiger met her.
I didn't know
he
that.
Married her. Yeah, he was keeping another. She was an umpire from France, keeping another golfer's children. Tiger met her, liked her, they got married. So
but
she
see,
made
you know, and
Tiger
Woods, again, it's not in the industry. But let's just put Tiger Woods into the conversation, the equation. Tiger Woods was America's boy. He was America's favorite golfer, like the Cowboys is America's favorite football team. However, when the world found out that Tiger Woods was screwing 13 white women at the same time, Tiger Woods was immediately probably the most hated man in the world overnight.
But, okay, we got to go a little bit before that.
Okay.
Because before Tiger Woods' father died, Tiger would win almost every other tournament and come in second or tie for third. And you would see shots that Tiger hit into the woods on purpose to say, I think I want to try this shot that I was practicing the other day to get out the woods. Tiger would win. See, I really believe that Tiger's father told him, boy, don't you go out here winning all these tournaments. These white people ain't going to like that.
That's
why we won his first Masters. They say, what we having for dinner? Beans, cornbread, and chicken? No, really, that's what was said.
And, you know, and listen,
and
I have white people.
For.
And this is not about white versus black. Sometimes people don't realize in being a black person, these are just experiences that we've had. It doesn't have anything to do with us being racist. This is what we live in. You know, so when we speak about it in the way we have tonight, it's not about white versus black. It's about the fact that we're just telling you or talking tonight on the show about experiences that we've seen as a black person and how life goes. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, oh, there they go playing the race car. But that's just really what it is.
Carrie, I agree that you say that's what you are. But I'm in this America. My birthday was last week. I just turned 55 years old.
Wow.
All I've seen is white versus black in America. So tomorrow, if it's different, I'll have a different conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's one way of putting it. I mean, because people don't, you know, a lot of times people just don't get it. And they'll say, oh, there they go, talking about everything is black and white. But I think sometimes, you know, I think the old cliche is so true, if you walk a mile in my shoes. I mean, I think we deal with certain elements of racism every day. And sometimes, you know, it's so the norm to us, it just rolls off. And then other days, it's just right there in our faces. And so some of the things that we've talked about tonight as far as the industry is concerned, that's just stuff we just recognize. I mean, it is just is what it is. You know, so if we've offended somebody, we apologize tonight. Y'all, it's just, this
I
is just
I really apologize for offending you, but I'm glad you listened.
Okay, y'all, that's going to have to be the final word. But you know what, we had a great show, y'all. We talked about a lot of stuff in terms of what's going on in the hip-hop industry. And is the price to be a hip-hop artist too high? I want to say thank you to my guest tonight for joining me. This is Skip Flanagan, joined late, but thank you, Skip, for joining in and chiming in tonight. Dunny B, Chili Moose, and AJ Houston, thank you all for coming tonight and being a part of the panel. Also, y'all, listen, we do this each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Right here. Be here every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. But this coming week, we're talking to Lindsay Williams. Tuesday night, Lindsay Williams called me this week and said, listen, Carrie, I got to come back on your show and tell y'all what the elites are about to do. Y'all don't want to miss that show. Lindsay Williams has come on this show I don't know how many times, and I must be honest, he has never been wrong. And this particular show, he's promising to tell us something about the fact that the elites are trying to schedule a date to collapse the currencies of the world. That's the money, y'all. That's our dollar bill. And all the euros and all the other currencies across the yen. And so we need to know about that. Now, if you got $30 like I got, you know, if they collapse the currency, I'm just still broke. I broke down, I'm going to be broke then. If you got some money, you know, somewhere that you're worried about.
Dollar bills, y'all.
You say what? You might need to tune in to Tuesday night show. And Tuesday is it May 3rd? I think Tuesday is May 3rd. I'm getting the dates wrong. Tuesday night, whatever Tuesday night, y'all, this coming Tuesday night, it's the 30th, I believe. I'm sorry, it's the 30th. April 30th from 8 to 10 p.m. Central Time, 9 to 11 Eastern. Lindsay Williams is going to be right here center stage telling us about the elites trying to schedule a date to collapse the world currencies. And if you've ever followed the show, you know Lindsay Williams is a fixture around here, and every single thing he's have come true. I mean, nothing has he ever said on this show that the elites told him has not played out. So you definitely want to tune in for that. And the following Friday, we'll be back on schedule, and we will be talking with Dr. Rodrigo Rodriguez. And he's a doctor out of Tijuana, Mexico. Dr. Rodrigo Rodriguez will be with us. And he basically, if someone you really want to call in and talk to, he is willing to answer any of your medical questions for free. You just have to call in, and he'll give you medical advice. And we're going to start a new segment with him where he's going to be with us, and we have the segment titled 24/7 Healthcare with Dr. Rodrigo Rodriguez. And that's going to be a segment that you're going to need to chime in and ask your questions once a month on. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here. This is Carrie Chai saying goodnight to you all. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.